All right, well, thanks for this opportunity, and I too really appreciate being part of this symposium. I first knew Larry because I was a graduate student in Minnesota, and Larry would always come to these meetings and come to your poster and talk to you, and was a great mentor that way as somebody from the neighboring state as a practicing a professor, what you were aspiring to be. And then on down, I also was working a lot professionally with him through the Sierra 17 group, working on phosphorus. So thanks, Peter, for including phosphorus as part of this. My goal today is to take advantage of a symposium approach, to be able to step back and maybe look a little more broadly at our tools. I think phosphorus index has been a tremendous opportunity, but I think that there's opportunity still to step back and make some improvements. I want to acknowledge Nathan Nelson. I put him on here as an author because as I put this talk together, I realized I was relying heavily on some talks that we've done regionally on this topic, and I thank Nathan for his help in putting this talk together. I think as we think about developing tools, we need to recognize it takes time to do a good job of developing tools. There's an evolution over time. You think about soil test phosphorus as an agronomic tool. We go back to the 1890s, 1910, is the era where we first were making connections between we can extract something from the soil, and that predicts something about response of a crop. And it really took 50 to 80 years after that to get to using the tools that we use today, you know, in terms of Malic 3, Bray 2 test, and those types of things. When you look on those kind of timelines, we're early in the process with respect to developing our phosphorus loss assessment tools. And as Deanna pointed out, Lemenyon and Gilbert is only about 20 years ago, and so we shouldn't be surprised as we step back now and think about developing our tools that there's going to be significant changes maybe in our approach as we learn more about these tools. The tools we use today, we shouldn't be necessarily expect to be the mature technology that we're going to put in place. The P-index concept has been a really successful concept, but I think in some ways it may be holding us back a little bit scientifically. The term P-index has really gotten great penetration. If you talk about environmental agriculture, mention the term P-index, pretty much everybody has heard that term and views it as a good thing, and that is a good thing. But because that term is so generic in some respects, it hides maybe some of the differences that are already present in our tools. There's some real differences about our approaches. And so, and then I think it also maybe holds us back a little bit because we're always trying to work on the P-index. And there's actually a much more complex world out there that we're trying to work with as we try to implement nutrient management planning on our farms. So I think we have an opportunity, and that's what I'm hoping to talk about today. I come from this from somebody who works training people who write nutrient management plans, developing software tools that help farmers and help consultants do a better job of developing tools. And so I'm bringing that sort of a perspective to this discussion. So we had some opportunities. We looked towards next generation P-index tools. NRCS has emphasized a regional approach, which is a good thing. I won't talk much about that. There's an area around clarification of water quality goals, and I'll hit on that as well as clarifying temporal context of each P-index. You know, these are areas which I think have not gotten enough attention. And I think we also need to be focusing a lot more on the user capability as we develop our tools, and I'm going to talk in detail about that. And then by extension, that allows us to think more about promoting voluntary adoption through easier-to-use tools and tools that have applicability beyond manure. I'm going to show a couple slides here that I use, actually, as I set the stage when I give nutrient management planning trainings to help emphasize a few points. I mean, I think we all in this room probably recognize that the nutrient management planning is a process, it's not an outcome. Though I will say, particularly in the regulatory world, there's a sense that when you develop a nutrient management plan that you've developed a matrix, you know, with fields on one side and time on this side and application rates, and what you're developing is this matrix of set rates. But I think it's pretty easy to understand that when we go through a nutrient management planning process, we're developing a decision what's the word I'm looking for? You're trying to create a blueprint for making decisions. And we know that when we develop that first initial plan, it cannot be the final outcome, per se, of a rate. Because we know that we're going to be getting other information as we travel along. As we develop our strategic plan, looking ahead maybe 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, depending on who you're writing the plan for, NRCS likes 4-year plans. Some states' regulatory plans can be as long as 5 years. We know additional information is going to come in. We're going to get perhaps new soil test values. If you're a permitted operation, you're going to get new manure tests on an annual basis. These are all pieces of information that are going to have to be integrated into your existing strategic plan, and you're going to have to make adjustments based on those types of information. So we know that when we write a strategic plan looking forward, an application rate can't be known, that it's going to be based, there's going to be additional information coming in, and so therefore, you know, really this strategic process is more about what's feasible. Again, that sort of blueprint for decision making. So when we step back and we think about really the whole nutrient management planning process, there's really three to four steps involved in that process. First is developing that strategic plan that offers your long-term goals and integrates that into a feasibility assessment. Then there's going to be a process of tactical planning where, for example, at the end of a growing season, you maybe sit down in the winter and think through, well, I've got new manure tests, I had to make some adjustments to my cropping system, I'm going to have to make some tactical adjustments to that plan in the winter. And there may also be maybe seasonal adjustments as you realize, oh, this spring we're having a wet year, I have more manure on hand, some of my fields I can't apply manure to because of the wet year, so we may have some tactical planning on that scale of weeks or months. And then finally, there's an implementation phase where you have the person leaving the equipment shed with a manure applicator asking, is this the correct day to be applying manure on this field? Are the conditions on that field appropriate? As I look at the weather forecast, is it appropriate to make those kinds of changes? And then we also have to introduce to this the people that are available to help make these decisions. On some farms, you'll have access to a certified planner, somebody who's been trained and received specialized training, has the competency and the ability to use some of the complex decision support tools that are needed to do this kind of assessment, and they're also familiar with the regulatory and other restrictions on manure management. Another person who's always available for this is a farmer. A farmer obviously has the capacity, they're used to making complex strategic decisions, but they may not have the familiarity with the specific tools related to nutrient management or the rules and regulations associated with that. So they have the capacity to make those kind of decisions, but they don't necessarily have the specific capabilities and the tools that they need to use. Many farms use contract applicators. Contract applicators, their capabilities can vary widely depending on who they are. They may be just a guy with a truck who's spreading litter for a few local poultry houses, to some operations that have multiple applicators and have access to some of the highest sophistication in terms of site-specific manure application. So, you know, with that particular group, they're very experienced in sort of short-term decision-making related to land application, but it's a little bit unknown what type of computer skills, what type of familiarity they may have with respect to the higher level decision-making on a strategic plan. And then, of course, there's the farm worker who's going to be doing that application, who may have a high school education, unknown computer skills, but again, very experienced with implementation decisions. So if we bring this together, we need to start thinking about, as we develop our tools, we need to think about what are the different decisions that have to be made and who it is we want to make those decisions. And I think that if we step back and look at this and, for example, think about the dedicated planner, well, obviously, it'd be beneficial if we had a dedicated planner who was there on every farm to help making those strategic decisions, but we have to ask ourselves sometimes, is that always possible? Are all farms going to be willing to spend resources on that? And then when we move to that tactical decision-making to adjust, again, it would be nice if they would bring in that strategic planner, but is it realistic on some of our farms we have trouble getting that tactical planner, that dedicated planner there once every 4 years, that they're going to hire them to come back every winter to make that adjustment? And is it reasonable to expect that dedicated planner can show up every time that we have, for example, unexpected weather events that are affecting our plan for that spring? And we certainly don't want to be reliant on the dedicated planner skills for that implementation level. As we move more towards the farm manager, the contract applicator, some of those farm managers want to have strategic tools that they have access to. Can we design tools that meet that type of criteria? But we certainly need those two levels, the farm manager, the contract applicator, to be good at using tactical application tools. And when we get down to implementation, you know, there we really would appreciate having simplistic tools, simple inputs, simple outputs to interpret that can be used by a farm worker. So as we look across at some of the types of tools that are out there already, and some of the things that have been suggested as tools, I'm going to skip the regional risk, jump to the field and tactical risk, but you know, questions about which fields, which strategies, changes to my plan. You know, at the most complex, you can have things like a modeling approach, and Deanna mentioned the NTT. You know, with those heavy input type models, there's two types of complexities. They're difficult to understand, to learn, they're complex to use, plus they tend to have much more extensive data requirements. Then as we move into our decision support key indices, you know, that drops what I give more of a low to moderate level depending on those key indices. And then as we see some of the examples of that are out there in terms of implementation risk, they're appropriately typically like the Wisconsin Runoff Risk Advisory, you know, requires finding yourself on a map on the internet, and it gives you an indication about how far how what has to be done. How are we doing on time, by the way? Okay, thanks. So as we look more specifically at the P indices that are out there, we run into what I call the Russell 2 problem. Many of you are probably familiar with Russell 2. It's an erosion loss calculator. I've done a lot of training on Russell 2, particularly for the Purdue's manure management planner version of it, which is a great improvement in terms of simplicity to use. But still, for dedicated planners, you need to go through step by step how to use that tool. And given that, you know, it creates a challenge for us in P-index implementation. So it's difficult to imagine a tactical planning tool that includes Russell 2, I would say, because it becomes a barrier if you require that to be part of your planning tool. So as we look, we need to think through, ideally, who do we want to make the decisions, what are their capabilities, and we need to design tools that they can use so that they're able to make those decisions easily at those locations. I want to change directions just a little bit and return to this issue about clarifying water quality goals. One of the and this topic is one that I think has received actually surprisingly little attention and actually has a huge impact really on how you develop and assess a tool. I mean, I think most of us are familiar with processes like TMDL processes, where they're focusing on how to restore a particular water body, and those typically are focused on load basis, but there are some restrictions that are concentration basis. So I think we need to be thinking through, as we develop our P indices, what exactly are we trying to affect with our P index? Are we interested in minimizing load, or are we interested in minimizing concentration? You're going to take different approaches. We need to think about the time context that we're working with as we develop that tool. Are we trying to assess a rotation? Are we trying to assess years within a rotation? Are we looking at seasons, or are we looking at events-based factors? And when we look at our existing P indices, and this is just a small selection, we see there's actually quite a bit of differences in terms of the apparent time steps of those. The Missouri P index is focused on a five-year planning window, trying to assess over a five-year plan, an average annual over that five-year period. If you look at like Kansas and North Carolina, they're focused on annual losses and trying to zero in on that year of the highest potential loss and managing based on that. And then there's a whole suite of indices like the Pennsylvania Index, which are where you're running your index on an event-based basis. Now, I'm not trying to say that one of these is better or worse. What I'm trying to indicate is that among our P indices, we already have a range of approaches and a range of ways that we're looking at these issues. And so I think that we need to maybe step back and maybe look at this more strategically as we move forward. As we look at, for example, a strategic planning process, it's probably appropriate for us to be looking at long-term average rotational or annual rotational or seasonal rotational losses, or seasonal losses averaged over time. As we move to tactical planning, if we're focused on that year-to-year adjustments, maybe it's that annual or seasonal losses. But as we move into, we can also be moving into looking at tools that are focused on seasonal losses. And then, of course, as we get to the implementation phase, there's an opportunity for more short-term weather forecasts. The thing I'm trying to point out here is that as we move forward and start to think through developing our tools, we need to recognize that there's different decision points along the way, and there's maybe different criteria that we should be using to affect those decision points. And that right now, instead of looking at one approach fits all, that maybe we would be better off by developing a suite of tools that addresses both the different planning objectives as well as the capabilities of the different speakers, the different people that are out there making those decisions. So, in summary, then, I guess my goal today was to take a step back and maybe and encourage us to look more broadly at the issue of developing P assessment tools. We've had great success with our efforts so far in terms of developing the P index, but we need to recognize there's going to be there should be opportunities maybe to further develop the way we approach those. I think there's a real need for us to do a better job as we develop our indices to define clearly what the goal is of that particular tool. And then we need to make sure that we develop tools that are accessible to the people that we want to use them. And then finally, I think it's important for us to realize we are not developing the P index, that our goal is to have a suite of tools that address key decision points along the way. As we go from developing a strategic plan to implementing that plan on the farm, there's going to be key decision points along the way. And it's a much more textured, much more diverse set of things than the P index to deal with. And I guess a motto that I always have, since we work a lot with computer development, is that our tools can be complex, but they have to be simple to use. So, so anyways, with that, I appreciate your time, and thank you. I'll just say, I gave this talk, a dry run of this talk, and I'm surprised I had time left over. I had trouble getting to 20 minutes, so... It's a good, so I'm glad to say there's time for a couple questions, if there are any. In the back?
Yes, my name is Fred Mendel. Thank you for your talk. What's like the ratio of the type of manager or worker to the number of farms? Does that make sense? Like, how many dedicated planners, farm managers, contract applicators do you need for each farm?
I'm not sure I fully understand the question, but I guess, you know, we find that, I mean, typically our farmers, at their permit operation, they're going to most likely have a dedicated planner who they've hired to write a plan. Not necessarily bring them back every year. I mean, there's certainly quite a few very few farmers write those long-term plans. In terms of, as you start moving down to a number of applicators, you know, whether they work, you know, we certainly have a suite of farms that use contract applicators, and one of the reasons they use those is it's easy for them to bring, you know, two or three application trucks, and they can apply a lot of manure in a hurry. So that's one of basically it boils down to the size of the farm and, what their constraints are in terms of how many applicators per farm. Am I speaking to the question?
Yeah, I think so.
So, all right, thank you for your time.